Hello, you're listening to a Zen Studies Society podcast. To learn more about our community of Zen Buddhist practitioners, please visit zenstudies.org.
Blue Cliff Record, K77. Umongs, a sesame bun. Engo's introduction. Turning upward, you lead others by the nose. You are like a hawk catching a pigeon. Turning downward, others have you by the nose. You're like a tortoise hiding in its shell. If you come forward and say, fundamentally, there is no upward and downward, what use is turning? I will say, you are going into a ghost cave to make your living. Now tell me, how do you distinguish black from white? After a pause, Engo continued, if you have the precepts, follow them. If not, follow a precedent. Main subject. A monk asked Umon, what is the teaching that transcends Buddhas and ancestors? Umon said, a sesame bun. Secho's verse. Zen practitioners who ask about transcendence are numerous. Just look, all patched up, yet full of holes. Umon plugged the gap with his sesame bun, but problems still remain to torment you. Turn this way, and if someone in the back row would like to take the spot in the front, please do. Looking over these past few years, wow, drastic circumstances. And it may feel as though it's getting worse than ever. Probably when the pandemic started, some of you were just, what, in your first or second year of school and had to navigate that. So rough. And this session, what a time of anguish. Continuing war in Ukraine, drought and famine in the Horn of Africa, and unfathomable nightmares in Israel and Gaza. Atrocities. Totalitarian regimes. Retaliation. More brutality. And the likely conflagration of warfare spreading, of accelerating extinction of species after species. And Mother Earth saying to us humans, I have supported you for a long time, but I don't think I can continue unless you really change your ways. Now you may be thinking, oh, that's a downer. What a way to start a Tay show. I came to session to get away from all that. Good luck. We have to be with it. I can't turn away. So I found myself singing as I was thinking what I wanted to say today. And probably some of you can join me. Where have all the flowers gone? Long time passing. Where have all the flowers gone? Long time ago. Where have all the flowers gone? Yeah. Girls pick them, every one. Oh, when will they ever learn? When will they ever learn? And we'll go to the third verse. Where have all the young men gone? Long time passing. Where have all the young men gone? Long time ago. Where have all the young men gone? Gone to soldiers, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn? When will we ever learn? As always, such precarious times, we ask, what can we do, right? What can we do? And turning to our practice with ever more conviction. Many of Zen teachers in this country, members of the American Zen Teachers Association, have been communicating through our listserv. And there have been some very insightful comments. Rafe Martin, some of you remember when he came here some years ago and read from his books of the Jataka tales, parables about how the Buddha offered himself to many different beings in a drastic state. So Rafe wrote this. Here is something I emailed to our little Sangha right after Hamas's atrocities in Israel were first reported, a few days before we began a five-day session. Since then, that initial horror has only been compounded. Personally, traumas out of family history I'd thought sufficiently past are being renewed. The roots of the Holocaust I now see were never far away. And I think for many of us who were born during the 40s, especially, I was born in 43, I think Rafe around the same time, there's what they call generational trauma. So what he sent out, he said, is not meant to serve as a replacement for other forms of action or as an evasion, but simply as an encouragement to really do what we are already doing. The point, as always, is that practice is active, not passive. It's a way of doing something valuable for all. We live in a reciprocal universe. No one and nothing is ultimately isolated or alone. In deepest reality, whatever happens anywhere in some way affects us. And conversely, how we live and act and think affects everything everywhere. Given what is now going on and the suffering involved to so many, please do what you can to keep your practice in mind as you go about your day. When sitting, please really sit. Don't just sit in zazen dreaming of other things. Commit as fully as you can to this breath, this count, this koan, letting all else go. In this simple way, you will be participating in actively helping to bring peace or in helping to establish the possibility of peace in our deeply suffering, terribly unpeaceful world. And he said, I think of the Jataka tale of the brave little parrot. How many of you know that? The forest is burning, and the little parrot sees one little thing she can do to help stop the blaze. And she does that one little thing with her whole heart, bringing her tiny drops of water in her beak, one by precious one, ultimately has an effect much greater than logic could ever predict. And he ends, the so-called big picture is built of very small things. Breath by breath, drop by drop. And some of you know Horizon Alan Sinocchi. He's a West Coast teacher, who's very much a peace activist. And he wrote, no words can bring back a life or heal a broken body. Words cannot free a hostage or release a million people from the destruction of their homes and forced evacuation. But even if words are insufficient, our silence is also unacceptable. Silence is easily mistaken for inattention. So today, irrespective of terrible things done on both sides of the conflict, let the world say, enough. We love you all, Israelis and Palestinians. We are all of one human family. Let us talk among ourselves and ask how we can help, even in small ways. Some of you remember what Martin Luther King said in 1957 when he gave a sermon in Montgomery, Alabama. Who was alive in 1957? It was called Loving Your Enemies. He said, hate for hate only intensifies the existence of hate and evil in the universe. The strong person is the person who can cut off the chain of hate, the chain of evil, and inject within the very structure of the universe that strong and powerful element of love. And of course, in the Dhammapada, one of my favorite passages in twin verses 5 and 6, for hatred can never put an end to hatred. Love alone can. This is an unalterable law. People forget that their lives will end soon. For those who remember, quarrels come to an end. Horizon also observed, the Hamas attacks on Israeli civilians and the Israeli military's bombing and invasion of Gaza can only deepen the decades of intergenerational trauma on both sides. With bitterness and hatred, however understandable, etched upon hearts and minds, there are no victors. We may not yet see clearly what to do, but we cannot turn away from this suffering. And then he ended with a line from the Metta Sutta. May all beings be safe. May all beings be free. So we cannot turn away. This is our practice. This is our Kanzeon chanting, our prayer to Kanzeon in the Lotus Sutra today. In Enme Juku Kanongyo tomorrow. And we have to remember the true meaning of prayer is not to ask for something, but to give. Dropping all expectations of some wished for outcome. Prayer is what we can offer. It doesn't matter what the so-called faith tradition of that prayer is. Jewish prayer, Islamic prayer, Christian prayer, Buddhist prayer, Haudenosaunee prayer. It is truly inconceivable. This is what we know we can do, must do. Prayer is what we can offer from our compassion. This word, which means actively being with, not apart from, passionate interbeing with our hearts cracking open. Today's koan, Engo's introduction, turning upward, you lead others by the nose. You are like a hawk catching a pigeon. So this, what is the teaching that transcends Buddhas and ancestors? The ancestors gave unreservedly and could act effectively, freely. Got that pigeon. Turning downward, others have you by the nose. You're like a tortoise hiding in its shell. If you can't respond, if you can be pulled to and fro, this view, another view, and are unable to act. He goes on, if you come forward and say, fundamentally, there is no upward and downward, what use is turning? I will say, you are going into a ghost cave to make your living, looking for some easy way out where you're not called upon. It's easy to make some glib statement that sounds like Buddhism. Fundamentally, no upward, no downward. No need for my engagement. Oh, yeah? And then he says, now tell me, how do you distinguish black from white? In other words, what is your discernment? How do you know what to do? Can you see clearly? Does your practice allow you to take this path, to make that turn? And if not, you're not paying attention. And then he pauses, moment of silence, and then continues. If you have the precepts, follow them. If not, follow a precedent. Precedent here means an earlier case. And with Umon, the renowned Umon Bunen, a towering pillar of Tang Dynasty Zen, who lived from 862 to 949, was a successor of Seppo Gison, and his direct, sharp, profound sayings appear in many, many cases. So if we need to follow a precedent, we can find Umon everywhere. His school of Zen only lasted 200 years, but his impact continues. Last session, who was that Golden Wind session? Any of you? Golden Wind session. Wasn't that something? Umon's Tairo Kimpu. Tairo. Body revealed. Ro revealed. Tairo Kimpu. Golden Wind. And we are feeling this too today. Umon is saying, Tairo Kimpu. And there are so many others. What is Buddha? A monk asked. What did Umon say?
Kangetsu.
Kangetsu?
Straight wiping stick.
Kangetsu? She was a wonderful disciple of Nyogen Senzaki. But you're almost there, almost there. Kanshiketsu. But thank you for bravely throwing it out. Sorry, Kangetsu. And he often would answer on behalf of his monks. He would ask a question like, each of you has your own light. What is your own light? Nobody answered. So later he said, the halls and the gate. And later still, he said, blessing things is never better than nothing. A monk asked him, "What is particle after particle's samadhi? I'm sure you've wondered." Umon said, "Rice in bowl, water in pail." This. Are you awake? Are you here for your life? And today, a sesame bun. This short koan is so rich and so relevant to the time we are in. You may not think so, us first hearing it, but there's a lot to teach in this koan that asks for the teaching that transcends all teachings. What are teachings?
Words.
Words. Usually, we think they are words. And those words, how are they given? How are they put together?
A how-to manual.
Like a how-to manual for our lives, right? The teachings that we look to, that we read. Explanations. And usually coming from some intellectual framework. And what do? We grasp after it, attach to it, think, if I can just get this teaching, I'll realize the truth. And my life will be so much better. What did we hear today in the Diamond Sutra? This Dharma is like a raft. The Buddha teaching must be relinquished. How much more so? Misteaching. So here again, the word discernment is very important. What is teaching? This world is full of misteaching, right? Isn't that what has come about to such an unbelievable degree, people using all kinds of, now you can make it up any way you want. We used to think looking at pictures of models on magazine covers, they touched it up, She actually has a lot more wrinkles or whatever. Now it's astonishingly prevalent that people can put out there whatever. This is the truth. So again, discernment. And then the Buddha asked this morning, has the Tathagata a teaching to expound? And what did Subhuti reply?
No.
In a word, no. The Tathagata has no formulated teaching to expound. And why? such a great line, right? We can all memorize this. Because the Tathagata has said that truth is uncontainable and inexpressible, that neither is nor is it not. So everything you read, everything you hear, just remember this. It neither is nor is it not. In case 27 of the gateless barrier, some of you have worked on this, a monk asked Nansen, is there a Dharma that has not been preached? Nansen said, there is. The monk asked, what is that truth that has never been taught? Nansen said,
it is not mind, it is not Buddha, it is not things.
Not. And truly, nothing can be said to be it. Neither is nor is it not. There's nothing that can be said about it. So you might wonder how to convey it. Can we? This is the dilemma, right? People are asking us for it. I'm sitting up here. It. So we have to come from a place of non-thinking or beyond thinking, as this koan puts it, a place that transcends the teachings of the Buddhas and ancestors. What is this? Place that transcends. That's beyond or prior to. And there's a wonderful passage in the Shobo Genzo, Dogen's great work, where he wrote, you should stop the intellectual practice of pursuing words and learn Ekko Hensho, which means turning the light around and shining back. Turning the light around, shining back. Wonderful. Mind and body will naturally drop off, he said, and the original face will appear. This is Zen practice. Looking into the mind source instead of what we usually do, pursuing thoughts, pursuing external stimuli, distractions, or the sayings of the Buddhas and ancestors. So Dogen called the practice of Ekko Hensho the essential art of Zazen. And he told this story. Master Yoksan Igen was sitting, and a monk asked him, "What are you thinking of so still and intent? Have you ever been sitting at home and one of your kids comes up to you and says, 'Dad, what's going on?'" "What are you thinking of so still and intent?" And Yoksan said, "I am thinking of that which is not thinking." The monk asked, "How can one think of that which is not thinking?" Yoksan said, "It isn't thought." So we can use kind of skillful means for our own minds. We can use the word "who" to get to this "isn't thought." Something like, "Who is thinking?" And that brings us into what's very necessary for our practice, great doubt. To really question our assumptions. "What is this?" is another way. Basui said, "Kore nanzo." What is this? Or, who is hearing right now? You are listening. Who is listening? Who is hearing? What is thinking not thinking? Thinking the unthinkable. There's another story about Yoksan. I love this. He had not given a lecture to his monks for some time, for obvious reasons, right? Hello. Finally, the head monk came and said, "The monks miss your teachings." "All right. Strike the gong and call them to the Dharma hall," Yoksan said. When all the monks had gathered in the hall, Yoksan walked out without a word and returned to his room. The head monk followed him. "You said you would present to Teisho. Why didn't you? Why didn't you give us a lecture on the Dharma?" Yoksan said, "Lectures on the sutras should be given by sutra scholars. Talks on the shastras should be presented by those who study the shastras. Why are you bothering this old monk?" Wonderful. And Yogen Senzaki commented, "A Zen teacher exemplifies what the sutras teach. Shastras are commentaries on the sutras. Sutras and shastras mean nothing to one who lives as Buddha taught." Yoksan knew that a lecture for beginners was just the finger pointing to the moon, from morning to night, and night to morning. His living was a continuing Teisho, the real one. Monks who overlook wordless teaching are not fit to study Zen. The head monk deserved 30 blows. Thus spake Senzaki. He also told this story. Some of you may remember from Eloquent Silence. He said, some time ago, a priest from Japan visited me in this Zendo. It was in Los Angeles. What is Zen? The priest asked. I put my finger to my lips and whispered, we do not speak in the Zendo. He followed me into the library and was about to ask the same question again. So I put my finger once more to my lips and said, we read books here in silence. When we reached the kitchen, I did not give him a chance to ask his question, but said, we cook here without a word and eat without speaking. As I opened the door and shook hands with him, he gasped, what is Zen? Before going away. But after all, discursive thought is what we're accustomed to. It's how we lead our lives, right? It's very hard to break that chain, as you have noticed perhaps in your zazen. Thought, thought, thought. But we must, because it is samsara to continue it. This happens, then this happens, then this happens, then this happens. When will it ever end? When will we ever learn? And what's driving that wheel of samsara? This everybody knows. No name is necessary. Don't have to remember what it's called. What's driving that wheel?
Our ego.
We might say ego or...
Separated. Attachment.
Everybody talks at once. What?
Attachment. Personality. Separate individuality.
Well, let's just be simple and say the self. The self. Driving that wheel. Driving that train. High on cocaine. No. Wrong one. But it too, right? It too. As you have found out, any substance will bring you right into that cycle of samsara like nobody's business. So, what does this self do? It discriminates, right? It's so well, very good at discrimination between this and that, this nation and that nation, what should be and what shouldn't be. It makes objects of others, right? Fundamental issue is self, other. But what about when there is no discrimination? then no self-consciousness occurs, and then no othering occurs. And that's why we sit. We can drop that cycle of discrimination. So in the various emails that we've been sharing, AZTA, we've been looking at Dogen's Ekko Hensho as a way to respond, to address our grief, our concern about what's going on in all those ways I spoke of earlier. Gendo Allen Field, you know him, he's in Vermont. He wrote, "Ekko Hensho is like the first light of morning, a moment of utter engagement before thought of self and other arises." When you first open your eyes, just that light of morning before you divide everything up into what you like and you don't like, what you fear and what you want more of. In that moment, we can really experience utter being, empty of that separated individuality. So non-thinking, beyond, before, transcending thought. All of these ways of putting it are born from emptiness and disappear into emptiness. Would you like some tea, Ruth? You sure? I'll have some. Did that help? This is what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
I drink.
Mr. Cho and Mr. Lee.
This is what's so amazing. We don't realize the power of this interconnection. That's what we're talking about. Another of the teachers, Chosen Bays, wrote, "There is an experience before thinking, which is not dissociation or trance, but very functional, because discursive thought, which seems to be fueled by anxiety for the self, however subtle, is not in the way. And more energy is available because there is infinite energy in the world, and we stop blocking it, and discursive thought anxiety is no longer continually sapping our energy." Now, a number of you have spoken about the amazing energy felt during the sitting right after the Diamond Sutra. And also at various other points during our time together, this energy. And even seeing clearly the energies of the three poisons, as we can much more clearly during session. As they arise, we can see them. Oh, that's greed. Oh, that's anger. Oh, that's delusion or ignorance. We can see them because we have encountered this fundamental emptiness and we can appreciate them as teachings that help us break through what our self-imposed limits, those tight constraints we have come to believe in. Oh, well, that's just who I am. I'm a person who is anxious. I'm a person who can't breathe. I'm a person who will never get out of my horrible little shell here. Yeah. Don't believe that. We heard this morning a bodhisattva should develop a mind that alights on nothing whatsoever. That is free. This original, this fundamental mind, which is always here, prior to anything that distracts us from this pure source, from this turning the light around. So more and more we find we can trust in this. We can trust this process. This is why we come here, after all, to deepen our faith in this. This echo hensho, turning the light around and shining it back. Thus we can respond right here, free of reactivity, free of our long cherished views and opinions. We can face the suffering, our own and so-called others, and vow to come forth Chosen noted, it's the experience of the body being empty, then the arms are in activity. Like Kanzeon, 1,000 arms, always at the ready. Then what is necessary is right at hand. The skillful means, the tools in each hand. So in this koan, the monk asked, what is the teaching that transcends Buddhas and ancestors? This is no idle question. It's not some kind of speculation. Obviously, he must have had some insight that made him ask that question. Each one of you here had some insight that drew you here. this truth that has never been taught. And hearing this question, Umon said, a sesame bun. And this is enough to make you go, what? But what about this sesame bun? I've never tasted anything so wonderful. To experience it this way, this moment, to pick up whatever it is and really taste it. That leaf floating down, oh, you may say, I've never seen this leaf before. Never. I've never smelled this before. And you know, there are no words that can match or describe this experience, right? Well, how was that sesame bun? Well, it was a little chewy and it had a nice flavor, a little sweet. No. To realize the wholeness of it, the immediacy, this in itself brings forth the natural welling up of gratitude. It cannot be taught, okay? It can only be experienced. This gratitude is none other than love. That changes everything. And so right now we may call it a sesame bun. And we must use specific words, all right? Because the fact of it and the essence of it are one. It's not enough to be abstract and say, oh, well, fundamentally, there's no turning. Yeah, right? I fall on your face with that one. No up, no down, splat. So that monk opened his mouth. He opened a gap. He asked the question. And into the gap, Umon crammed a sesame bun. But could the monk taste it? These are the teachings. They're always coming to us. Transcend Buddhas and ancestors. But can we taste them? So to really experience what has been revealed from the very beginning, this is our practice. This monk is us. To tear away the veils of delusion Don't try to patch them up, Secho says in his verse. You know your fear of actually being here for your life is based on what? Old stuff, old problems. You don't have to keep dragging them around. No one is saying you must carry that weight. You can sing that one too, right? So what I want to say is, I want to tell you this. Make of your life an offering. That's all. It's so urgently needed. And I wanted to say, you know, Secho's verse, basically I've just addressed it. Zen practitioners who ask about transcendence are numerous. We all want to know what it is. Let's get up there, you know, and not have to suffer down here. Just look, he says, all patched up, yet full of holes. We can't patch it up. Umon plugged the gap with his sesame bun. But problems still remain to torment you until you really taste it. You will find that problems remain conceptual, impossible, discursive problems. So one last email, and this is from Tygen Henderson, a dear friend who is the abbot of the Zen Center in Toronto. And he shared a teaching from Chagdu Tulku Rinpoche, who he said worked tirelessly for peace. He had thousands of students all over the world. He was born in Kham in eastern Tibet in 1930, and he died in 2002 in Brazil. His mother, Dawa Drolma, was a renowned female lama. So I will just read a few parts of what Tygen sent from this wonderful Tibetan teacher, Nyingma School. It is my wish, tell you what, resume Zazen, and I will read it to you, and you don't have to listen to it at all. You can just go right into Zazen without grasping after a single word. Transcending the words. It is my wish that the spiritual power of peace will touch every person on this earth, radiating from a deep peace within our own minds, across political and religious barriers, across the barriers of ego and self-righteousness. Our first task as peacemakers is to clear away our internal conflicts caused by ignorance, anger, grasping, jealousy, and pride. With the guidance of a spiritual teacher, this purification of our own minds can teach us the very essence of peacemaking. Extraordinary patience is necessary to work toward world peace, and the source of that patience is inner peace. Such peace enables us to see clearly that war and suffering are outer reflections of the mind's poisons. regard with equanimity the powerful worldly people who control the war machines. Do your best to convince them of the necessity of peace, but be constantly aware of your state of mind. If you become angry, pull back. If you are able to act without anger, perhaps you will penetrate the terrible delusion that perpetrates war and its hellish suffering. From the clear space of your own inner peace, your compassion must expand to include all who are involved in war. True compassion is aroused by suffering of every sort, by the suffering of every being. It is not tied to right or wrong, attachment or aversion. The work of peace is a spiritual path in itself, a means to develop the perfect qualities of mind and to test them against urgent necessity, extreme suffering, and death. Do not be afraid to give it your time, energy, and support.
This has been a Zen Study Society podcast. If you found it to be of interest, please consider making a donation by visiting zenstudies.org/donate. Thank you for listening.